afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. This is hour two on Sunday, March 22nd, 2026. And we just finished a segment with Claire Lopez on the whole Iran thing. Obviously, we ran out of time because with Claire, you always run out of time, but I do hope you will go back and listen to the archive. You can find it either here on KCNR's website at kcnrradio.com. You can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and we pull out all the free enterprise moments and so that you have uninterrupted listening. How about that? And you're free to send it to anybody. You're free to utilize anything we have. We don't copyright anything. We want to make it available to the public so that it is useful data for you. Did I let you say who you are?
No.
Oh, did I just cut you off?
Oh, no.
Okay,
no.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ryan.
Hi, Aaron.
Your turn.
Hi. And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Yep. 15 years we've been doing this. But every week it's like a brand new show. Oh, my gosh. I'll be hiding my own Easter eggs if I'm not careful. Our guest this hour, we're going to kind of switch gears a little bit, but not quite so much. Our guest is Ronald Stein. He is a professional engineer. I had to do a little homework on that. I thought, professional engineer, what does that mean exactly? And I really thought it was pretty neat. Holding the PE, the professional engineer designation, comes with a serious responsibility. Professional engineers must adhere to a strict code of ethics that governs their conduct and decisions, and those standards emphasize public safety, honesty, and integrity. Violations can lead to a loss of licensure and legal consequences. I thought, wow. So, no funny business here. We're going to get just the facts. So, he's an energy consultant on energy literacy. God knows we need tons of that. California is awash in energy imbeciles. He is an ambassador for energy and infrastructure. Need that too. Co-author of the Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Clean Energy Exploitations, and a policy advisor on energy literacy for the Heartland Institute. We love them. And the Committee for Constructive Tomorrow, and a national TV commentator. He just is busy, and I have posted his books, actually, Energy Made Easy. I thought that was fun, and Just Green Electricity, I thought was also kind of caught my eye. And before I forget here, America Out Loud News is where much of his stuff is posted, and we have that on our page. But it's americaoutloud.news.
You know, it's not that easy being green.
you can look that up for us and play it at the break.
Well, also, I don't think you can limit energy imbeciles in California. I think there's
that's true. We're drowning in them.
Yes.
But the thing that is as far as things that are going on now, right now, he has also authored a couple of articles. People who listen to the show frequently and are following that domain at gascrisis.org that tracks to our show, you will find that he has done some articles with Professor Michael Miché. You're like, oh, we know that guy. We've talked to him before. So, Clean Energy Exploitation, you should probably get that book and the others. But AmericaOutloud.news is quite a site. I thought it was just his. And I started reading. I sent him a thing. I told him I need an SOS. Somebody's going to come rescue me. There is so much information there. So, okay, do you go by Ronald or Ron?
Yes, either one.
Oh, darn it.
No answer to both.
Well, Bill is a William Call Me Bill, so I always like to ask, but I noticed your emails were signed with Ron, so I was like, should we go there? So I don't even know where you would like to start today, but we are a target-rich environment in this state, are we not?
Yes, we are, and the policy we have in California of reducing emissions is really making California a national security risk for the entire country, because we're the fourth largest economy in the world, and we have three of the largest shipping ports, L.A., Long Beach, and Oakland. We have 30 major military installations. We've got 9 international airports, and just the airports and the military installations they're consuming like 13 million gallons of aviation fuel every day. And the interesting thing about California, we're an energy island. We're separated from the other 49 states by the Sierra Mountains. There's no pipelines over the mountains. So if there's a refinery in, you know, Texas, there's no way to get fuel to California other than through the Panama Canal. And it's cheaper bringing it in from China. And so, yeah, we're an energy island, and that's the differentiation that separates us from other states that are going green. And if, because all the fuel we use here is basically made here. You have to understand that crude oil by itself is useless. It's like the Beverly Hillbillies. When it's bubbling out of the ground, it's useless black tar. But if you build a multi-billion dollar refinery, and they heat it, they beat it, and they crack it, they do all these crazy things to it, and they extract from the crude oil transportation fuels, jet fuel, gasoline, bunker fuel for the ships, diesel fuel for the trucks, and all the minerals and metals that make all the products in our daily lives, oil is useless. And that's the thing that the world's starting to recognize, that refineries, it's not, I wouldn't say it's really not oil driving the economy, it's the refineries.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you get the products that you can use, then you go. Because you see it right now in Ukraine is attacking Russian refineries. If you could take out the Russian refineries, you could demobilize the military. And, you know, that's an interesting thing. And in California, the regulations are already eliminated. Two refineries, and there's seven left. Four of them are really big. Two from Chevron and two from PBF. And right now, we have refinery capacity that cannot make the fuel needed in California. So we'll be importing fuel. And that's a scary thing. At 30 military installations being run by foreign refineries, that is scary.
Yeah.
Well, that's just stupid.
Well, what's insane is instead of importing all this stuff, we should be exporting. We have enough to export as much as we want if we were allowed to drill and you know, build our infrastructure. We could export. We could probably be the largest exporter. But
you're right. Yeah, we have a lot of natural resources here, but oil production is on the decline, terminal decline, you know, permitting and setbacks and everything else. And everything that Trump wants to do to produce oil, Newsom is Trump-proofing California.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's basically stopping everything. So we're setting the tone, and like I say, the fourth largest economy in the world is going to be run by foreign refineries.
That's yeah, if they want.
Yeah,
you know.
Until they decide that they don't.
Yeah, they want to put a little hurt on us. All they have to do is stop mm-hmm. the flow, and we would be in terrible shape.
Well, and like we've been told before, you know, one refinery fire, you know, slows everything down. If you had a ship that goes down in the ocean or
big storm
problem at the ports.
Yeah, a lot can go wrong with that scenario.
So well, Ron, we have... go ahead.
Well, the paradox of California's environmental policies is we're going to be increasing worldwide emissions.
Right.
Because these foreign countries don't have the same controls we do. And then you've got to bring that transportation fuel by a ship thousands of miles over the ocean. So, yeah, California emission controls is actually going to be increasing worldwide emissions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the paradox.
Do you think, I know that the, you know, this last week the news was all a flutter with, oh, we're going to be drilling offshore in California and the Defense Production Act and all that. And I don't know what the percentage is, but I'd say 80 to 85% of the people in this state kind of breathed a sigh of relief and thought, oh, okay, we're going to be good now. I don't think they realize we don't have the ability and may not have the ability to refine it, especially if these guys leave.
Well, you're right. I mean, because, I mean, take a look at crude oil. We had, before the Stu refinery shut down, back in 95, I think we were pretty much 95% self-sufficient. Between California oil production and Alaska oil production, it met 95% of the demands of California. Well, we've been clamping down on oil production here. So in 95, we were 5% dependent on foreign imported oil, and that increased to over 60%. Well, the good news, bad news. The good news is we'll be importing less crude oil because we have less refineries to refine it. The bad news is instead of crude oil coming in, we'll be importing the finished product.
Mm-hmm. If we changed this California blend and all that, what kind of a difference would that make in the scope of all things? I mean, we've been told it does very little for the environment in comparison to what's available elsewhere.
I'd probably leave it up to the refineries to answer that question. The other thing, too, is, you know, I'm not sure. We have a special California blend. I'm not sure China refineries are going to be excited about producing a California blend. So
right.
We don't have as much control over them. It's kind of like, you know, whatever they make, we're going to take, you know.
Well, that question came up with the last time we had him on the air was this fuel we're going to import from India and South Korea. Is anybody checking to see if that fuel, stands up to the California requirements? And then nobody seemed to know the answer to that.
Nope, ask Newsom. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we're losing control to control what they're doing. You know, so yeah, we'll be at the mercy of whatever they make.
Yeah,
take.
Exactly. I read too. You were bringing up the point of oil, or wind and solar doesn't produce anything, where oil produces
lot. That's true. They keep talking about the energy transition.
Right.
It's not an energy transition. It's electricity transition.
Right.
Because wind and solar, all they do is produce electricity. They don't make anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take a look in your house, the hospitals, the airports, and try and identify one thing, just one thing that a wind turbine made. They don't make anything.
Mm-mm.
They just make electricity. Now, the real crux, electricity came after oil. Let me repeat that. Electricity came after oil. We got six ways to generate electricity. You can do it by wind, solar, natural gas, coal, hydro, nuclear. But all six ways to generate electricity came after.
Mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera. So if you get rid of oil, you get rid of electricity. Back to the 1800s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing is all the green solutions, wind turbines, solar panels, EVs, they're all 100% made with oil.
isn't that awkward?
The lubrication. I mean, take the EV. You know, the powers, the wires, the insulation. It's 100% made with oil. And, you know, if you go to EVs and Newsom wants everybody driving an EV. Well, if you drive an EV, he's going to eliminate one product made at the refinery. It's gasoline. But what about the other 5,999 products that are part of our daily lives? You know?
Well,
you know, everything. The other thing to look at, too, is everything that needs electricity. Let me repeat that. Everything that needs electricity, iPhones, computers, air conditioning, et cetera, et cetera, again, is made with the products made from oil. So if you get rid of oil, you get rid of everything.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of alternatives. I mean, you have soybean oil and things like that, but not at the volume you'd need to keep up with the production of what we make today with oil.
You're right. Yeah, it's scale. There are alternatives, but there's nothing that can scale
mm-hmm.
to meet what the world needs. And so, yeah, we're in a field of hurt here. And I don't know, like I say, my passion with all the articles I've written, my weekly articles that go out, and I co-author with people around the world from South Africa, Japan, you know, whatever. And my passion is stimulate conversations. And I tell people, I'm 100% in favor of getting rid of oil. What's your backup plan? And we've had 200 years to replace it and been unable to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, like say, the replacements, the corn grain, are oil-based. You know, the turbine blades, the solar panels, all the lubrication, you know, goes into EVs. And it's just amazing that no one's relating these two. So that's why I really push the fact that it's the energy transition is not energy transition. It's electricity transition. And that's the reason electricity is going up, because you wind up having a redundant system. You've got the reliable power, which is coal or natural gas or hydro or nuclear, which is continuous. And then you have the redundant system of wind and solar, which is weather dependent. And if Newsom wants to run the world on wind and solar, it scares me to think that the surgeon, before he goes to surgery, is going to have to check the weather report to see if he's going to have electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because it does. You're looking at intermittent, you know, power supply. You can't run a business on an intermittent power supply.
Right, right. I mean, like I always say, when I'm on Zoom, I was giving an example. I hold up my iPhone. Electricity can charge my iPhone, but electricity cannot make my iPhone.
Oh, that's a really good example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of basically everything. The computer, same thing. Electricity, you know, allows it to operate, but electricity cannot make it.
Yeah, that's one of your notes on here. So for people who are like, ooh, I want to use that, it's actually on the page. Your thing said, it's shocking that policymakers are oblivious to the reality that wind turbines and solar panels do different things than crude oil. And your first point, renewables, such as wind turbines and solar panels, only exist to generate occasional electricity under favorable weather conditions. Since they cannot make tires, toilet paper, iPhones, or any product or transportation fuels to support lifestyles and economies around the world. I mean, we can't switch over. That doesn't mean it's not even possible.
No. And, you know, the scary thing is, of the 8 billion people living on this planet, 80% of them, that's more than 6 billion people, they're living in poverty. They haven't joined the Industrial Revolution. And they may never, if they don't have the products that are made from oil. You know, it's kind of like a restaurant. If a restaurant serving bad food, stop going to it, the restaurant goes out of business. Well, if you're eating a steak and, you know, at the same time you're raising your flag, we've got to stop killing cattle. You know, duh. You stop eating the steak, but we stop that too. But the key thing is, if you really want to get rid of oil, stop using the products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, is Newsom to come out and say, we're going to close the airports, we're going to close the shopping centers, you know? And, no, that's not going to happen.
Well, even their little electric bikes, you know, or even just the ones where you pedal power, you need oil.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
you know, like I say, I keep telling people, identify something, just one thing that was made by a wind turbine or a solar panel.
I'm going to start doing that.
I've seen several giant messes created by a wind turbine.
Yeah, really? And some dead birds. Got a pile of dead birds. Do we have any songs about dead birds? We have to take a really quick break. We did find Kermit the Frog, though. We thought he would be fun to bring in about being green. But our guest is Ron Stein. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's not easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it might be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that.
Yeah, even Bachman Turner Overdrive knew. They were on vinyl. We wouldn't even know that song if we didn't have vinyl. So Ron, when you speak you guys do conventions, you're very prolific in the education on all of this. Do you get the impression that there's any moving of the needle, I guess?
I think, yes. I've been doing this for like 10 years, focusing on this, writing articles weekly and the books I've written. And the good news is I'm seeing articles written around the world addressing the same subject. In fact, a lot of times when I do an article, I co-author with somebody else because, you know, it's an opinion, but I want to make sure it's just not my opinion. It might be somebody from Japan, South Africa, and, it's a worldwide problem. And I think there's more and more people following the message and trying to stimulate conversations to get this down to reality. Because the people that have the power and have the microphone, they're the ones setting the budget and setting the policies. But the policies are not for all the people. And that's really scary because any transition really has to be for the 8 billion people on this planet. You know, we've come up with this transition from going to wind and solar. But wind and solar is very expensive. It's costing trillions of dollars. And who can afford that? The wealthy countries. And it's amazing how much money and effort we've been put into wind and solar by the United States, by the UK, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, we're just getting electricity, and it's a redundant electricity supply system that's built into the rate you're paying for electricity. Think Germany. I mean, they're the first ones to get rid of all their coal-fired power plants, mm-hmm. get rid of all their, nuclear. They got the most expensive electricity in the world. And we're following them. We're right behind them.
Well, it's really not a transition.
Substitution.
Yeah, they're substituting. They're not transitioning it because you still have a massive amount of the economy dependent on oil, and like you said, they're transitioning a portion, and I think a very small portion of electricity, but nothing else. So it's
right.
It's very lopsided, and it's also, I think, a technology that works, but it doesn't work on a mass scale. We're not ready for that. Our infrastructure's not set up for it. I think a big reason we're going through this whole gas crisis is because they're still hooked on the idea that everybody's going to transition to electric cars. Well, we can't do that. If a third of the population of California went to electric cars, it'd crash our grid. Plus, there's no place to charge them. We're just not set up for it. And that part of the equation has been completely overlooked, even if they don't want to admit it.
I think it's like it's just denied.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they've Do you get the impression that these things have been evaluated and they've come up with this answer, or if it's just like, hey, we don't like those choices, so we're just not going to talk about them?
There's no engineering talent in the policy-making effort.
Oh, Lord, yes, we neglected your specialty. Your people are not there, are they?
But, in California, the fact that Newsom wants everybody to drive an EV, well, the only thing that's going to reduce out of oil that people see is gasoline. I mean, you still need oil to make the cars. And the thing about EVs is the elites have bought them. The elites will continue to buy them. But we're running out of elites. Yeah. Now we're getting down to the common folk. I mean, I live in an area in Southern California. Most of my neighbors have an EV as a second vehicle. It's never used. It's a backup car.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, most people can't afford a car to begin with, let alone two cars. And so it really puts a challenge on it.
Sure does. Yeah, the cost of the car is a major hurdle to start with. But you're right. You know, you go into areas, I mean, we travel down to Walnut Creek every once in a while, and you go down there, and you see quite a few more Teslas and electric vehicles down there. But as soon as you get out of the, you know, high-income neighborhoods, you don't see them anymore.
Right.
And that's, I think that's pretty telling.
And it's telling right now in the financial news, too, because Ford, they've written off, I think, $19 billion in removing several EV models from their lineup. GM, they're down billions on their EV assets.
Mm-hmm.
Honda, they wrote off, I think, $15 billion for their EVs. And, yeah, like I say, it's the common folks who are not buying EVs. And, you know, another thing that people don't talk about is California is a big state.
Right.
Yeah, 400,000 miles of roadway.
Sure.
And right now, the California fuel taxes are raised almost $9 billion to maintain those 400,000 miles of roadway. So now we're putting EVs on the road. They're heavier. They're going to tear up the road more. And we're going to be losing all the revenue to repair the roads.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fuel taxes that will be collected.
Right.
So if everybody had an EV, there'd be no fuel taxes. And, you know, putting heavier vehicles on 400,000 miles of roadway and less money to maintain it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah, but they'll just implement their
vehicle miles traveled tax.
Yeah, their mileage tax, so all the people that aren't driving electric cars can pay for the people that do. That should go over really well.
Yes, that would really help the poverty level go up.
Exactly.
Well, can you imagine? Here you have all of the electric fans, right? And so what happens when they whip around and start charging them the vehicle miles travel tax? Because they will.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nobody's getting out of this deal.
Yeah, they'll charge them, too, because they're still using the road. So yeah, now what's your advantage?
Yeah. on the national security front, where do you see that going? I mean, is this next down, I guess, in my 30,000 foot view, I see the consumers having no fuel and all of it being routed to military and whatnot for national security.
Well, there's a couple things on national security, because yes, we'd have our military airports run by foreign, fuels, our international airports run by fuels coming from foreign countries, out of our control. But the thing that would really affect our economy is having three of the biggest, busiest ports in the country. All the products that come into Long Beach and Los Angeles and Oakland, they get unloaded, and what happens when they unload them? They put them on a truck to the rest of the country. Well, if those products, if you can't fuel the ships aren't going to come in. And if you don't have fuel for the trucks, you need products to put on the trucks, and you need fuel for the trucks. The rest of the country is going to suffer, too, because they're not going to be getting deliveries that they have been getting in the past. So it just snowballs.
And don't forget, our airports, our international airports, I mean, they've got to use an ungodly amount of jet fuel. Are we just going to shut them down because we don't have enough jet fuel? That would absolutely kneecap our economy.
Yes. Yeah, between the, there's, again, being a big state, there's 9 airports that take international flights between San Diego and, Northern California. And, right, the aviation fuel they're using and the aviation fuel the military is using, right, that's like 13 million gallons a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, we were back in New York a few years ago, and we went up to the top of one of the buildings. I don't remember which one it was.
I believe it was the Empire State Building.
Big one. Looked down at the traffic, and it just looked like a sea of taxi cabs. I mean, it was three quarters of the cars on the road were yellow, you know, and it's like people there use public transportation and taxis. Not everybody has a car, but in California, you have to have a car. You don't have mass transit in every town. You have to have a vehicle to get around, and I think that alone should kind of frighten people that if we go into a gas shortage, you're going to have millions of people unable to move around.
Exactly. You know, that's interesting. The price of the pump for your fuel has all these taxes, all these environmental programs. And every time I fuel up, and I did that this morning, part of the cost I'm paying at the pump, I'm paying for the high-speed rail.
Yeah.
I'm still holding my breath for that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With not one inch of track?
That's right.
Well, your article that, one of the articles anyway, that you and Michael Miché did back in, this was in July of 2025. I mean, it was a while ago, titled California Continues to Devastate Its Economy for a Net Zero Dream World. Since I would have to go back and do a little homework, but I don't know how many refineries that we have lost since that time, but Valero was just the most recent, but...
Yeah, it was Phillips and Valero. We lost those two refineries. And I think that was represented about, I think, 17% of the fuel being consumed here. So it's going to be made up by foreign refineries.
Yeah.
So we don't have that many refineries left. We have like seven left.
Yeah, we have seven.
Seven left and big, the big ones.
And six...
The thing that scares me is, you know, Chevron... They moved their corporate headquarters to Texas.
Right.
And they got two of the largest refineries in California. And I was wondering, are they going next?
No. Well, they've issued the letter, you know. So for anybody who thinks we might be, you know, scaring everyone for nothing or whatever, please go to gascrisis.org. That takes you directly to the page on our site that has the letters from the three companies, Chevron, PBF, and Marathon. Those letters from those corporations are there, and they're very clear. It's like, Dear California Air Resources Board, if you continue to screw us over, we're going to go away.
Yeah, we're shutting down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the gist of it.
Yeah,
I think it was the Chevron letter actually said, and, you know, didn't say this, but this is what I heard, was, hey, just in case you forgot what we do, and then it listed, like, what they provide, you know, 50% of the marine fuel to the ports and different things like that. I thought, yeah, and these guys aren't moving. The CARB isn't moving on that.
And so far, they've been able to, I think, keep ahead of the game by raising prices and, you know, their various distribution means. But the time is coming when price isn't going to be the issue. It's going to be availability. And you're going to pull into a gas station and they may not have gas, or you may be limited to 10 gallons, or who knows. But the availability is the biggie. It's just not going to be available for you. So,
it's supply and demand.
Yeah.
And CARB, what they're doing, the reason they wrote that letter to CARB is CARB is tightening up on the emission standards. And these refineries are the cleanest in the world in California. And, you know, I can't fault them for leaving. It's a business decision. They're basically manufactured.
Of course.
They're taking crude oil and they're making products that are usable by the public. And they can make it here, or they could make it in Texas or Oklahoma or somewhere else where they have access to some crude oil. And yeah, so it's easy decision.
Mm-hmm.
For some of them.
Well, and I've had people say, oh, well, the president will just stop them. It's like, hot tip. We talk about communism, but we haven't actually adopted it yet. No. You know, Zoran Mondami isn't running the country, and we didn't sign up for that yet. You cannot hold companies here, and I do find it fascinating that Steyer, Tom Steyer, who's running for governor, God save us all, is campaigning that he stopped big oil. And I thought, well, everybody goes to the pump, ought to thank Tom Steyer for that.
Yeah.
We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Ron Stein. He is the co-author of the Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Clean Energy Exploitations. And God knows we're living that dream. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Freedom, what did you hope to learn about here? If I was someone else, would this all fall apart? Strange, where were you when we started this game? I wish the real world would just stop hassling me.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile, my curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go. Riding along in my automobile.
Hose gas, 3 cents. Song kind of gives me a little seizure every time I think about it. So if two, what's your, I guess it all depends on which two, right? But if one of those companies left and took their two refineries down to the studs, can we survive?
It would be an economic disaster for Californians. We'd be paying a real premium, and like I said, the businesses, I think in the last decade, there's 800 companies that left California, some of them even major companies.
Yeah, I just don't think the supply will be there to...
Because everything's so expensive, cost of fuel drives everything.
Drives everything,
the fuel goes up, cost of tomatoes goes up, the cost of labor goes up, and it's just really expensive to run a business here. And if you're, with all the internet access, you can basically run that business on the other side of the border of California, in Arizona, Texas, Wisconsin, you pick it. I mean, it's, everything is cheaper. You take a look at our gas prices and their gas prices, that's pretty much indicative of the labor cost too, and it just drives everything. So it would be devastating. I think they really have to identify before they, I would say, allow them to shut it down, because they shut down, they're going to shut down, but you really got to find out which country are we going to be dependent on to replace them. We haven't built a refinery in the United States in about 50 years. Now they're building a new one in Brownsville, Texas. But as I mentioned to a lot of the people down in Texas, that's of no use to us.
Right.
All the fuel they make, there's no way to get that to California. You can't bring it by truck, not the volume we need. And, you can't send it through the Panama Canal. It's cheaper to bring it in from the Bahamas. So it can be an economic disaster, especially with us being the fourth largest economy in the world. You would pretty much cut down the fourth largest economy in the world. And that would be devastating to every business and everybody living here.
Yeah, I don't... Do you deal with the policymaker side, or are you predominantly in the education side?
On the education side.
Yeah.
I always joke that I would love to have a conversation with these policymakers. In fact, some of the articles I've written is really intended to be like a bunch of questions for ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, because this is an election year. A lot of people running for mayor, a lot of people running for governor, and ultimately somebody to be running for president. And these are the questions that have to be asked of the candidates. I mean, like, you know, Tom Steyer, he wants to get rid of oil. Well, I've got a bunch of questions. You know, what's your backup plan? How do you keep airports running? How do you keep the hospitals running? You know? And, yeah, there's just a... I just need to know. I don't want to put them on the spot. I really do.
No, you do. We owe it to the rest of the people who don't know to ask the question.
I think these candidates have to share their energy literacy with the public. They understand the implications of what they're doing.
Yeah, because until we really demand that, we're not going to get any change. Any ideas on... you know, strategy, let's say, I know we've talked to some of the refinery guys and, you know, folks in this industry, and they say once you shutter a refinery, you don't just bring it back up.
No, it takes decades to get these things planned and built, and they've got to get their contracts set, because you don't want to build a refinery without a supply of crude oil. So you've got to have the supply lined up, you know, guarantee you got something to manufacture from. So, they're very complicated and very time consuming, and really financial commitments.
Sure.
Commitments.
And even if we overrode, you know, if the federal government overrode the idiotic California rules that are crushing them, you know, that they pay all of these CARB regulatory fees and stuff, and then the guys producing overseas don't pay any of it, kind of a little bit of an inequity there from a business standpoint, and they've noticed. Huh, imagine that. So if the federal government said, hey, look, you guys are obviously, you know, too stupid to take care of yourselves, and so we're going to step in and help you so you don't kill your state and the people in it. I don't. If I was a company, I don't think I would stay, because as soon as this administration is gone, it seems like the boot goes right back on your neck again.
Exactly. Yeah, the cost of labor is really tough, and cost of labor is really driven by more oil. Like I say, if you make all the products very expensive, then, you know, just cost of living goes up, and if cost of living goes up, you demand higher wage rates. And, you know, the minimum wage in California is much higher than the minimum wage in Mississippi.
Oh, sure.
Well, that's true, too.
And like, so that's the reason why a lot of companies that are, you know, leaving is just leading to less expensive places to operate. It's a business decision, return on investment, because businesses looking to make a widget and sell their widget, and if they can make their widget for less money, and they might be able to have a more effective product to sell.
If you were, you know, making changes and had the ability to, you know, kind of move the chess pieces around, do you see any way to kind of cut through the middle, you know, make the green energy people happy while we can still operate in a modern society without, you know, going right straight to Thunderdome?
Well, I joke with people, you can't bring a logical question into this conversation.
I wasn't going to be. I was trying not to be difficult, but yeah, that's kind of. I guess that's the thing. How do you?
Exactly, because, you know, these are logical questions, but, you know, you bring it up and you just hit a brick wall. The green has, you know, so much momentum and a lot of funding that, you know, it's ongoing. You know, take the EVs. You know, there's a lot of lithium in California. I think, but we have environmental laws. We got labor laws. I mean, if you want to mine for lithium here in California, that would raise the cost of lithium, which would raise the cost of EV battery.
We are literally just winding ourselves into the dark ages, aren't we?
Exactly. And the book I wrote, Clean Energy Exploitations, is all the exotic minerals and metals to build that battery, the lithium and the cobalt, is controlled by China and Africa. And they're mining for these minerals and metals with child labor. They got no labor laws. And the environmental degradation is atrocious because they have minimum environmental laws. So we're exploiting people who have yellow, brown, and black skin so we can get that EV battery. And the environmental degradation is atrocious. And the photograph we had on the book was a photograph from Africa. It was a military guy with an Uzi overlooking a family mining for lithium by hand.
I got to look at that again.
Yeah, people don't seem to, doesn't seem to bother people. If they don't see it, it's not happening. They just want
their... people ask me, they ask me if I have an EV. I said, no. They say, would you buy an EV? I said, no. And they say, why? I said, for ethical and moral reasons. They said, what the hell do you mean by that? I explained, I'm not willing to financially support China and Africa for them to exploit their people and to do environmental degradation on their land so I can feel good about, you know, going green. Now, ironically, our government does. They're basically providing financial incentives for China and Africa to continue exploiting their people with different colored skins and continue the environmental degradation because California is going green with EVs. So I think that's unethical and immoral, but that's another issue.
No, it's a really good point. We've done a huge amount of shows on China and the conditions there. One of our guests routinely refers to it as the agreement that we have with them is a type of generous barbarism.
Yes, it's it is a barbarism, and it's not just double standard. And I keep thinking, in my office, I've got the globe that circulates around. And, California represents, I think, half of 1% of the world's population.
Mm-hmm.
The other 99.5% of the world lives outside of California. And we're the fourth largest economy trying to set all these environmental policies and goals. And it's going to be devastating, right? It doesn't, this state... But I think it's going to prevent the 6 billion in poverty from ever joining the Industrial Revolution.
That's a really good point. Because we're forcing them to do something that isn't working for us. And the piece of the puzzle we haven't even touched here with just a couple of minutes left is our food supply. You can't...
That's right.
You know, there are no farms running electric, you know, harvesters and electric... I mean... Just even electric mowers. John Deere got caught in the crossfire of that here in California and couldn't sell electric mowers. Well, that's nice if you have a small front yard, but if you're mowing anything of substance...
Technology's not there.
That's the challenge. It's the scale.
Yeah.
There are so many people, and
And if you don't...
There are solutions to work, but they're small.
Yeah, and if you don't have to switch to electric and you and you're a business and your gas power equipment is more efficient, is more economical to operate, it makes no sense to switch over to electric. And, people want to do the right thing and have a green economy and blah, 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 but I'm not sure they've even proven that technology is... any more green than what we have now when you look at how they're produced, where they're produced, the amount of pollution that comes from, you know, producing them overseas. We're just moving the smog cloud around the globe, you know. So,
well, that's right, because the emissions, like I say, they're much more much greater than California.
Sure.
And so we're shutting down clean refineries, and you're going to basically replace them with refineries in another country that's not as clean. I think we breathe the same air.
Mm-hmm.
What? You mean the air over California isn't special?
Well, I think Newsom thinks it is. He only breathes California air.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, it's interesting because as we head into an election, I always figure the worst thing that we could do in the state of California would be to allow people to believe that the issues in Iran are what are driving our fuel prices up. That would just be missing the boat completely because all of this is really self-imposed.
Exactly.
Our time has run out. Our guest, Ron Stein, we're going to have you come back and talk to us some more about energy literacy because God knows there is a dearth of energy literacy sweeping the globe.
Very good.
His book is Clean Energy Exploitations. You should definitely read it. We've linked it up for you at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.